Stay with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Sulis. Interested in learning new skills online at a pace that suits you? Visit ecollege.ie to apply for one of our free online courses.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
Well, let's go to Qatar now and to sportswriter with the42.ie, Gavin Cooney. Good morning, Gavin. Thanks for joining us today.
No bother at all.
So, Gavin, we were all watching the Battle of Britain, England v Wales. Desperate first half, great second half. You were looking at the other match. So what did we miss?
I've gone full football hipster. I went to see USA Iran, expecting to see a super turbocharged atmosphere. We got that. The noise in the stadium was absolutely extraordinary, created by the Iranian fans. Unfortunately, we saw a pretty poor and low quality game in which the United States were by far the better team in the first half. They took a 1-0 lead, and their goal scorer Christian Pulisic took a fairly sensitive injury as recompense for scoring that goal. And then the US got very nervous in the second half. They were left clinging on, defending deep as Iran laid siege. But Iran just lacked that bit of quality that they needed. And the Iranian story has been fairly extraordinary this World Cup. But as it's turned out, it has lasted only 8 days. And it's the US who progressed to face the Netherlands in the last of 16.
You'd worry for the Iranian team. And we've heard about these threats of retribution against them and their families for not singing the anthem in their first game, for half-heartedly, it was said, mouthing it for the second game. They did sing it, did they, last night?
They did sing it, yeah. They had sang it as well just before the Wales game. Now, looking at the close-up shots on TV, you couldn't say that they were singing it particularly lustily, but they sang it nonetheless. And what was also notable, I thought, last night was, whereas in the first two games, the travelling Iranian supporters drowned out that anthem with boos and jeers, there was nothing like the same reaction to it among the Iranian support last night. There maybe were a few boos here and there, but broadly it was well observed. And it was also notable that there were a lot more Iranian flags with the Islamic Republic regime emblem on it flying among the supporters at that game last night, because there was a controversy in the build-up when the US had omitted that emblem from the Iranian flag on social media, and the Iranian FA called for the USA to be kicked out of the tournament over that. Obviously that didn't happen, but yeah. It was notably different.
And that's a young USA team. I know the coverage here cut over to the end of that game, so we got to see their reaction. They looked a bit shocked to be through to the final 16, to be honest.
Yeah, no, like, it is, as you say, it's a young team. I think it's the youngest team in the tournament. But to make a blindingly obvious point, Claire, they have a lot of pace and a lot of energy. So it could be, they could cause a lot of difficulties, I think, for the Netherlands in the last 16. They maybe lack a little bit of creativity, especially up front. I mean, if you could take the Iranian striker Mehdi Taremi and put him in the US team, they would have won that game 3-0 or 4-0 and very comfortably last night. But they're going to be a really horrible opponent for the Dutch in the last 16.
Now, I was saying the first half in the England-Wales match was desperate. I mean, the analysts here had nothing to say. I mean, they openly said, we have nothing to say. I think Liam Brady said the singing was great from the fans. I just wonder, though, is there a strategy at play there? Are they moving up through the gears, or am I giving them too much credit?
It's hard to know. I mean, I think they probably are moving up through the gears. We were talking about this around the Boer draw against the USA. Like, England consciously set out not to win that game, almost. There was just such a lack of intensity to their play. And look, you can say that Gareth Southgate has been justified. They've now topped the group with 7 points. And we talk about England being dull and boring. They're the top scorers of this tournament. And they're only, I think, 3 goals off matching their best goal scoring return at the World Cup ever. So they do seem to be managing themselves a little bit through the tournament. But now, obviously, he changed the team a good bit last night. In came Marcus Rashford and Phil Foden, and now Southgate will face the questions, well, how do you drop them? Both played so well, and he's just so much attacking talent at his disposal that he's constantly going to be criticised in the UK press for the guy he doesn't play. There's a golden child.
He's in a great position, Gavin. He has an embarrassment of riches on that bench,
Yeah, but like, the top international managers are the guys who manage to find the right structure around those, all those superstars. It's what England couldn't do with their so-called golden generation back in 2006, when you had the admittedly like gargantuan egos of the likes of John Terry, Lampard, Gerrard and Rooney. Southgate has done a better job in striking that balance. And I think, there's so much pressure on him from the English press now to play Foden, or last year it was play Grealish. It might be play Rashford in the last 16. But, I think he's certainly his own man and he'll stick to it, and it's not always thrilling. I was listening back to what I was saying about the USA game and regretting it slightly. I was just like, oh, was I a little bit too worried about that? And I think, you know, they've got Senegal now in the last 16. I think, again, it might be time for Ireland to assume the position that England could actually go and do this.
Do what?
Go on and win it. I think I begin to get just a little bit concerned about that
really?
Possibility.
I don't know why I'm so surprised. I tell you what, I mean, I'm a football novice, a fair weather friend, but what I have seen in this World Cup is that when you see France, when you see Spain, when you see Brazil really kicking into gear, I just don't feel that England look anything like those teams when they are playing at their best.
Yeah, so, but have we seen England at their best yet? I mean, I think that
that's the question.
You may say you're a football novice. I think that's the broad consensus. Like, I mean, there is a doubt as to whether England can truly match France, Brazil, Spain, these really top teams. But, you know, they're on a collision course with France in the quarterfinals, which will be a great game. I think France would win that game, but, you know, it's going to be, you know, razor thin margins. And England have the attacking talent and they have the depth of attacking talent. You could argue that they have more depth in terms of the numbers of attackers they could pick than any other team of the World Cup. You know, France are down a couple of bodies with injury. England don't have an Mbappe or a Neymar, like an absolute iconic superstar that can change a game at the moment of a hat. But they have a lot. So they might not have a 10 out of 10 attacker, but they have a lot of 9 out of 10 attackers. So.
Mm-hmm. What about Senegal then? What can you tell us about them? You seem to have written them out altogether now. Don't do that, Gavin. We've been here before.
Where are my predictions? Senegal will be tough and stodgy opponents for England, but they are depleted, unfortunately. Obviously don't have Sadio Mane, who your listeners will remember from being just brilliant with Liverpool over the course of many years. He's injured. He missed out from the start of the tournament. They're also without their main midfielder, Idrissa Gueye of Everton, who picked up a yellow card last night, so he's suspended. So it will be a depleted Senegal team. Now, they will be tricky opponents for England, absolutely without a doubt, but I would expect England. They might need extra time to come through it, but I'd be very surprised if they don't.
Okay, and on the practical side, how are things there? Are the bus drivers still getting lost? Anything happening on that front?
I feel we're settled into a rhythm. Everyone knows where they're going now. We haven't got lost in a few days. There was one slightly strange turning off a motorway going to a stadium a couple of days ago. I've been going to so many, I can't remember where I was and when it was. I've lost all concept of time and place. I feel, honestly, I've been here all my life, but no, all is good in terms of everything has some sense of direction now, at least.
And are you hearing anything about fan accommodation or how they're getting on in between the games?
It seems to be okay. I mean, like, obviously there's those canvas tents that weren't exactly the lap of luxury for the price that people were paying. But the guy, like, I've been talking to fans in the porta cabins, and they say it's pretty fine. And the interesting thing about the lack of alcohol around the grounds is, you know, obviously some people are disappointed that they can't get booze. But, you know, for a lot of people, it's a very good experience. You know, there's no real edge around the stadiums. Yeah, it's just like quite a friendly, family-friendly environment. And I have to say, it's pretty good. I quite like it. You know, the metro is a pretty good experience on the way back without anyone being too drunk, and there's been no real disorder from fans travelling. So I don't know. Will future World Cups take this policy on to heart?
There could be a lesson in it, Gavin. Thanks so much for taking our call. As always, Gavin Cooney, sports writer with the42.ie. Next up, how to be thrifty, green, and clever with your Christmas shopping this year. Lots of handy tips on the way.
Today with Claiborne. Listen back on the RTE Radio Player app.